I remember packing bags, taking them to the restaurant where we had been staying in the back and leaving them there, and we never went back. Our family thought we were fucking crazy.
I knew that there was like no plan Bs. I remember, I can't believe you threw your entire life away. We found this cafe.
We just said, we'll take it. That's how young and dumb and naive we were.
It was not worth the amount of money that we
paid for. No, hell no. We just wrote this man a $2,000 check and we don't know him from Adam. Welcome to the first episode of the Founders Lounge. I'm Don.
Yvonne, a.k.a. Red.
People are probably wondering, what is the Founders Lounge? Why are we doing this? What is this going to be? This is the first episode of a new project that we wanted to do. And at the same time, it's kind of a farewell episode to Clean Truth. Good way to put it. As I was saying before the first take with technical difficulties, the Founders Lounge was a project that we've been talking about doing for a while. And what we're going to do with this is basically, people have told us many times that they want to hear more from you and I, and they want a kind of a different perspective, which I think is kind of cool and weird in the same way. People want, they want to see more of the behind the scenes, more of the ugly per se, versus more of what we've accomplished and where we're at. And I think people find it intriguing. So, what, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, we decided to kind of take a different angle and do the Founders Project, and the Founders Lounge is going to be the podcast, and we'll do videos and vlogs about different stuff with behind the scenes of you and I running the brand. But I thought it was pretty cool, and what hit me kind of pretty hard was when we were in St. Louis last week with some franchisees, and Anna Day, one of our franchise partners from Ohio, you were kind of talking about, I don't really remember what you were talking about, but it was something from our past and how we did certain things a long time ago and versus how we do them now. And really just kind of reminiscing on some of the things that we did behind the scenes that we haven't really shared a whole lot of. And they were like blown away and intrigued and excited to hear it. And I'm thinking, you guys find this interesting? Like, it's just kind of reinforced why I think we decided to do what we're going to do. And, so yeah, that's kind of what we're going to do, and that's what this show is going to be about. More of the behind the scenes with you and I and how we run the brand and how we came up and how we got started versus where we are now and how we continue to do the things that we do. I think that's the feedback that we've been getting that people want to hear, so we're going to give it to you.
Yeah, I know that we've been working on this for a little while because we just didn't know what our niche was. I'm not saying niche, but we were just kind of, yeah, just wanted something new and wanted to, even though we find our stories boring and we've actually tried to bury our past a little bit, it seems like it continues to come and it continues to show how this brand is evolving and how we do it also, you know? So I don't know. Just, I think it makes it more, what's the word I'm looking for? Like more, and it validates the path that we're on.
Well, I think it's more of who we are. So we started Clean Truth. When did we start that? 3 or 4 years ago. And it was good. Clean Truth was awesome. And thank you to everybody that listened to it and downloaded it. But we had a little bit of a different idea of what we wanted to do with that one. That was more along the lines of the tagline was, you know, calling people out on the status quo and calling bullshit on a lot of things. And we never really did that because it wasn't really our style.
Right.
It never really was. I'm not a vocal guy, and I'm not going to get on here and bullshit about politics and religion and world events. I'm just not going to do that. It's not my style. I've mentioned that many times, and I know it's not your style, but, you know, you mentioned kind of burying our past. I don't think it's more or less burying our past. We just never really thought it was that glamorous, and then come to find out every time we talk about it, that's what people love to hear. So we're like, okay, well, let's just embrace it and fuck it, we'll run with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I thought it was going to be a good idea for this first episode to just talk about our past and our background and our history and kind of give everybody a quick warp speed background story of where we came from the beginning up until now. And obviously we can bullet point it for time, but the very first episode of Clean Truth was our background. We called it you know, our background story, or I don't remember what we titled that one, but so if you've heard it, bear with us. This might be a little boring for you, but you might get things that you've never heard. So, but I think we recorded that episode 4 years ago.
Right.
So there, we, and our brand has grown 3x from there. Our following has more than doubled since then. So I think there's thousands of people out there that have never heard this story and I think would find it intriguing. That was my stomach growling. I'm going to let you go first. I'll let you talk about where you came from, where you grew up, and then we'll just kind of...
Sure. So I was a farm kid, raised in Hillsboro, Illinois. We always say that we're from St. Louis, but it really is about another hour north of that for me. And we just always say St. Louis because no one knows where Hillsboro, Illinois is, and nor, you know, the population. So farm kid, I have two sisters. My dad was always looking for the boy because if you grow up on a farm, your dad wants boys so that they can help, you know, with the chores, all of the labor intense stuff that goes with that. So being the oldest of the two siblings, or the, you know, three siblings, I just got a lot of that brunt. And then, so even though I hated it back then and thought it was the worst part of my entire life, like now looking back is how it really molded me into where I am now. And it's kind of funny because we've bought the farm, you know, a couple years ago, and everything that I hated in my childhood, I'm currently doing in this stage of life. So my mom, even visiting her this last couple of weeks with Anna and those guys, she's even kind of made fun of me a little bit about it. And she's like, I thought you would never do that. And I was like, you know. So I was always, I feel like looking back now, I was always an entrepreneur. Like I started my babysitting business. I started, I always was doing can recycling, you know, picking up, rode my bike several miles a day to pick up cans and ditches from the road booze cruises. And I cashed those in. I used to collect walnuts from our big walnut tree and pick those on the winter and sold walnuts. Much anything you could think of that I could make money with. I just thought that, you know, as a kid, you just did it for fun. But looking back on it now, I felt like I started the entrepreneur a little bit earlier than what I take credit or, you know. So grew up there. I went, graduated high school at Hillsboro. And then I went on, my first passion was physical therapy. And it was just, I loved the health and exercise part of things. And, but being a farm kid and two other siblings behind me, PT school was really expensive. And that was the year that they just took that to a master's degree. And so when my parents saw the tuition of $35,000 a year, which is probably really cheap now for some parents out there, but back then it was just, my family did not have that. My mom was a stay-home mom. My dad was worked at a power plant. And so it just was not possible. So the closest thing my mom was looking, she's like, your cousin, Stacia, she's x-ray tech. You know, it's close enough. I think it's 2 years. You can get out and you can make good money, which good money back then was seriously $10 an hour. Like that's how much I graduated. X-ray was like $10.73 an hour to work. So, so did that and white picket fence dream. And that's how I was raised, is that you get married, you have children and, you know, all that. So married my first husband, had two girls, Shelby and Gracie, 24 and 21 now, and did that. And still in the back of my mind, I was just like, this is not what I want to do. I was bored with x-ray. I was trying to do party planning on the side of that. And in the middle of that, I got an opportunity to be a kickboxing instructor. And so did that for a year. And I always tell the prospects who come, you know, I was like, my clients were there. We were small town. There was a Hardee's, McDonald's on the corners. And these women would leave my classes at night and then go to one of these fast food and feed them and their children. And so one Saturday afternoon, we decided that they would allow me to meal plan for them. And so I did. So I started making chicken broccoli rice with like Glad containers. And lo and behold, it turned into a restaurant idea. Once I got melanoma and quit my x-ray job, learned that life was a little bit better. Didn't always have to have money in the pocketbook, but follow your passion, you know, and then the money would come. So that's how I opened Locale Cafe in Bethalto. My first choice was Edwardsville at the time, but couldn't afford that rent. And Bethalto, I know you guys have maybe heard the story, but there was a strip mall on one side and then the gym was on the other side. And so I was like, oh, these are like-minded people. So I opened the Locale Cafe across from the gym. And I think Anna's part was they didn't know that we lived inside the cafe for 2 years there because I couldn't afford a housing and the rent at the same time. So I would wake up, go to the gym, do my cardio, shower, brush my teeth, come back over and basically eat because, of course, we had food and start my day. And then as soon as I closed the restaurant, I would go back over to the gym and shower and then come back over and crash on a futon couch that during the day the customer sat on for to-go orders. So, and then that leads up to you because you were in there training legs one day and we just kind of crossed paths. I always thought, you know,
well, you're being nice about it.
Yeah, right? I was being nice on this story, but man, when the first day I met him, it was like he had on the stocking hat, it was all closed down. And I mean, obviously, you know, if you meet you once, you don't talk. So you just come off as an arrogant ass. And I mean, that was my first impression of you. So, and women were not in gyms back then a lot, squatting and doing stuff. CrossFit had not came out by that. I mean, the biggest thing right there was Billy Banks with the Taibo. So to see females in the gym and actually lifting and trying to grow muscle, like it just was unheard of and not the type. I'll let you pick up there.
You were on a roll. Yeah, I grew up about an hour south of where Yvonne grew up in Edwardsville, right outside Edwardsville. Graduated high school there in 98 and was a subpar athlete in high school. I was always kind of smaller than the average kid. Thanks, Mom. Got married really young. I think 23 and was divorced less than 2 years later. Nothing crazy. Just, we were just young and dumb, spending money like crazy, partying like rock stars and just spending money faster than we made it. And we just grew apart. And ultimately I think what did it was, which I don't really talk about a whole lot really ever, is how I kind of got into fitness in the first place, which was at a bonfire out in the middle of the country one night. I was super hammered drunk and was horsing around with a good buddy of mine at the time who was, the dude was a monster. We used to call him Chiquita Banana Hands because the dude was a farm kid and his hands were like baseball mitts. And I was just, I don't know, was in a mood one night and messing around with him. And I was like, I'm going to wrestle your big ass to the ground. And he was said, no, you ain't. And so like a little spider monkey, I jumped on his back and tried to choke him. And he literally grabbed me like I was a four-year-old and flipped me over his shoulder. And when he did, this right leg snapped in the mud and broke. And as soon as it happened, I knew it was broke. And I was so hammered. I won't talk too much about that, but I was so hammered. I rode in the back of a pickup truck. I think it was about a 45-minute drive from where we were. And I was so drunk, I was drinking beers and smoking cigarettes all the way to the hospital. And I was so drunk that when I got there, the nurses were cussing at me because I was like, telling him I had to take a leak and I wouldn't let it rest and I was just being obnoxious. But anyway, that's how I got into that. So I think that was kind of a turning point in my life because that's when I had to start rehabbing that leg and I started lifting weights from there. And ultimately we just kind of grew apart. I started loving lifting weights and I slowed down drinking. It was kind of an eye opener for me. And she never wanted to give up that lifestyle. So we just kind of grew apart and that's kind of what did that. But, you know, shortly after there, I was a carpenter. I was a union carpenter for 12 years. So went through a dark phase of my life where after I got divorced, I was a single kid at 24 making a lot of money at that time, which was at that time was a lot of money. So I was just kind of partying and girls and drugs and you name it. I mean, it was kind of a wild ride there for a time frame, probably up until 2009 when I decided to compete in my first bodybuilding show. Just before I met you, the year before I met you, and fell in love with it. I loved it. I was hooked from the start. Did that show, and then the very next year is when you and I met, and I think, if I remember right, I had already backed out of the show that you had committed to competing in, and then you and I had met, and that's when I was like, well, shit, I might as well do it then, because I think you and I had kind of hit it off, and I was like, well, I need to compete in this thing and be involved again. So I remember going back to my coach, Brett Becker, at the time and saying, hey, man, I'm changing my mind again. I'm going to do it now. So, but you're right. I mean, you know, the path that I had gone down at the time was not a good one. And, you know, I like to tell people at our discovery days when you and I are giving our background stories, had I not met you when I did, I'd be dead or in prison. And that's seriously no joke. I don't really want to think about where my life would have been if had that not happened, because especially the way the world is now, you know, had I not had somebody like you, meeting you, you know, somebody who had big dreams, big goals, I'd never been around people like that. You know what I mean? The people that I grew up with and my friends from high school weren't entrepreneurs. We were just blue collar kids who knew how to put our ass in the grass and work hard. You know, most of the friends that I had had a work ethic. They just never really were able to get out of that and think bigger. You know what I mean? So when I met you, I was like, damn, this is a woman who's got her shit together and she's got goals. And I had always had bigger dreams. I think I was just too scared to chase them. And, you know, the first time I walked into Local, that same week that you opened it, I was like, this is fucking awesome. This is cool. Because it was part of that lifestyle that you and I were already living before we even met each other. And I think it was really cool. And, you know, then we started talking about some of the things that we had in common. You know, you were making meal plans for clients, turned it into a business. I was personal training on the side and doing meal plans for people. I wasn't literally making their food, but I was giving them meal plans to follow. But I was meal prepping for myself because I had already competed. So that kind of transitioned over. And, I don't know. I remember a lot of those conversations on your makeshift bedroom back there. You remember that?
Yes.
With the futon. And we were like, well, I think at the time you and I had no ambitions of getting into a serious relationship. Neither one of us did.
No. I wore a fake wedding ring at the time.
Yeah, I remember that. And so I was kind of okay with it because I think I was finally in a place, which is weird to talk about, but I was finally in a place where I was okay being by myself. And I had never done that ever since I gotten married. I always had somebody that was around, and I had just recently, before I had met you, kind of mentally gotten to a place where I was like, I don't need to be with anybody. I don't need anybody around. I was comfortable figuring myself out. And then you come walking in. So, but some of those conversations led to, well, are we going to take this serious or not? And those were scary conversations. I remember you telling me that you had no interest in it, really. And I remember being okay with that. And then I don't even remember really what changed. It was just, we decided one night that we started talking about what life would look like if we were doing this together. And, you know, I think we just kind of took it and ran with it from there. But, you know, I like to tell people in our discovery days that I remember having the conversation with you and saying that the only way we could do it and do it right is I have to give up everything I owned because I was in debt. I was just a young kid with a lot of money at the time and bought a house, bought a new truck. I was, you know, the bank owned me basically. And because I remember you, those conversations, you're like, well, this business can't support us both. It doesn't make any money. So that was really the only way that we could do it, right?
Yeah, I was, we pulled out old P&Ls like that first year. And the P&L, like it said $23,000 for the entire year. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, it was crazy. I was like, but yeah.
So I remember us having that conversation. And then it was shortly after there, I remember you following me to the bank in the golden war wagon, your Chevy Chrysler or Dodge Chrysler Dodge, minivan.
Yeah.
It looked like somebody had gotten body slammed on the hood. Remember that thing?
Yeah.
Drove it to the bank, dropped the key fob on the desk, and we walked out. And then that was that. The bank took my truck. I think, I don't remember time frame, but shortly after that, we went to my house that I was living in at the time. Excuse me. And I remember packing bags, taking them to the restaurant where we had been staying in the back of that wedding salon, and leaving them there, and we never went back. I think we tried to go back one time, remember, and there was locks on the door. The bank had foreclosed on it by then. Funny story, I don't think we've ever told anybody, but do you remember breaking in?
I don't.
Yeah, we went there with your mom's truck to get stuff out of my garage, like furniture and stuff.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
And so the bank had foreclosed on my house by then, so they put these little plates on the doorknobs, and we wound up getting them off, and I wound up taking some of my stuff back too. But anyway, so that's how we became business partners in a very short period of time. Our family thought we were fucking crazy.
I know.
Your parents were like not happy about it. Mine were telling me I was an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always joke to your mom. I mean, even the last time we came home, I was like, remember, because your mom told me, you know, she's like, he won't be. Well, we hadn't even moved to North. So we hadn't even gone to North Carolina yet.
This is, yeah.
Yeah. So we're still in Illinois at this point. So, yeah, but they thought we were crazy.
I know mine were upset because I was giving up my pension and putting my union card on hold and just walking away from basically a 13-year career as a carpenter.
Yeah, I didn't get catch stuff from my parents until we moved to North Carolina. And then when we moved here, because I was still getting my x-ray credits or continuing ed. So I was still an x-ray tech at the, I kept my license going. And when we moved to Wilmington, I knew that there was like no plan B. So my license had to expire. And my mom, like, I remember, I can't believe you threw your entire life away, like all this. And I was like, I think it's going to be okay. Like, I think it'll be fine. I was like, I'll never go back to x-ray anyway. So yeah. So it was kind of scary letting it like go away, but it was best move I've ever did. So
here we are at this point, jumping in head first as business partners after only knowing each other 6 months, maybe. I'm trying to decide if it was even 6 months. I had given up everything I owned, and I think giving you every dime that I had basically to my name, almost damn near. And we ran with it. And then I remember us going to the Arnold. I don't remember. I always forget what year it was that we went to that Arnold Classic. But we were dieting for that first show that we did together. And you and I were inebriated. I remember looking at those. I can still look at those pictures, and like my face is all sunk in, and you have diet face too. And we're walking around the Arnold Classic eating cold fish with mustard on it. And
so nasty.
We walked into Jen Hendershot's booth.
Yeah, she was an idol to me.
Right.
So I mean, back when magazines were cool, Oxygen magazine was like everything I lived by, you know, like there's still all of the original magazines are still in our house upstairs. And yeah, so I lived and breathed by the monthly magazine. And she had just won Miss Olympia in the fitness. And so I was like, and she ran fat camps at the time, like all over the world. So she was one of the people I wanted to meet. And she, and if you know, I mean, Jen's just got a wild personality, just giving and so helpful. And so she pulled us in. We had our Locale Cafe shirts on, and totally, she's like, where's this at? And I'm like, Illinois. And she's like, I'm like, but we're going to go to Florida. Because at that point, we were talking about moving to Florida. And she's like, no, you can't go to Florida. She's like, you need to go to Wilmington, North Carolina. And we're like, where? That doesn't sound cool. Florida sounds cool. So, yeah, we went to Florida to look for some space and couldn't find anything.
Yeah, I remember before we even went to that Arnold, which was something I left out a minute ago, you had always told me from the beginning that you didn't want to stay here, that you wanted to relocate, you wanted to be by the water. And I was all about it. If I wasn't going to get away from that area, the end story was not going to be good for me. I wanted a fresh start, somewhere different. You know, I wanted to meet new people, be around different people. And so that's where we got the whole Florida idea from, was to go down and be by the water. So yeah, we met Jen and she told us to go to Wilmington. And we kind of looked at her like she had three heads, because we had no idea where the hell Wilmington, North Carolina was. And we didn't listen. We went to Florida, took the girls down there on vacation. I think we spent 2 days looking at real estate, pissing off realtors because we didn't know what we wanted. And wound up coming home, didn't find anything. And that's when we got the Edwardsville Cafe, right?
Right.
Expanded Locale Cafe into a second unit. It eventually took over the original one, so we closed it down and ran with the Edwardsville location for a whole nother calendar year, I think, because we went back to the Arnold and ran into Jen again, and she asked us if we had ever made it to Wilmington, and we said no, we went to Florida, and she damn near laughed at us.
Yeah, so that was in March.
Yeah.
And then she had a friend from Wilmington there. And who was doing the t-shirts? Stacy, yeah, was doing all the t-shirts. And Stacy was there, and she's like, "No, you should come down to Florida." So she invited us down there, and we were still competing for another show. So that was Labor Day weekend, which is coming up. So it's almost gave me chills for a minute, coming up. And we were dieting, and we're like, "Don't want to stay at home anymore. Like, let's just jump in the car." It was 17-hour drive here from us, so we're like, "Okay." So again, like, Facebook, Instagram, like all that stuff was not, it was just coming. Facebook had just like started at that point. So you couldn't like reach out to people. Like it was emails and, you know, that kind of stuff. So we got
on Craigslist. Maybe I was changing my theme song every week.
So we got on Craigslist and just looked for, because our history was that we just bought second gen restaurants. So we've never built a restaurant at this point. And still using George Foreman's, which is a whole, probably another episode of our operations at that point. Neither one have had restaurant experience. So, but anyway, we found this cafe. We found two. Actually, we found three. We found three locations here in Wilmington. And we put the address for Racing in our GPS, and that's where we travel. So 17 hours later, we pull in the parking lot of this cafe.
Yep. I remember walking in, and there's no hood. It smelled like bacon because the guy was running a deli out of it. But I know as soon as we walked in, we were hooked. Like, it was exactly what we wanted. It was exactly what we talked about doing, kind of the setup and the way the restaurant would flow and operate. I mean, it was identically what we wanted.
It had our colors,
which
was
creepy.
Paint. Yeah.
We wanted to be around a gym, a supplement store, which was ironically, both of them were right across the street at the time. We just kind of looked at each other and got chills, and we were like, this is it. And hit it off with Dave, the owner, from the get-go, and sat down after he closed that afternoon and talked to him and his wife, and he had told us what he wanted for it, and we didn't even negotiate. We didn't ask for a lease. We didn't know what the rent was. We just said, we'll take it. That's how young and dumb and naive we were.
And looking back, like, it was not worth the amount of money that we
paid
for.
No, hell no.
Like, it had no equipment. Like,
no.
I don't know.
And then we asked him if he could hold it, if we gave him a down deposit.
So this was September, the first weekend of September for Labor Day.
Yeah, because we had to sell our cafe back home. He said yes, so I remember writing him a $2,000 check. I remember doing that, and then we got back in our car and started driving back home because we had to get back.
We had to get back.
And I don't even remember how far down the highway we got, but I looked over and I was like, Yvonne, we just wrote this man a $2,000 check, and we don't know him from Adam.
We don't have a contract.
We don't have a contract. We don't have a sale agreement. We don't have anything. We were just excited. And he was an awesome dude, though. So we went home and sold Locale. We sold the equipment and the space to some Indian guys who were going to do Indian cuisine. That's a whole nother podcast in and of itself. That's funny. We will do one on that. It's a good story to tell, but we don't have time. But sold it for exactly the same amount of money that we needed.
Which is funny because we didn't even think about how we were going to operate. So we basically just like traded one cafe for the other, and like it still cracks me up, like our thought process. Yeah.
We didn't have a game plan or nothing. Thanksgiving rolls around and we pack up. We use your sister's dually and your dad's 16-foot car trailer.
Which was like pulling teeth from him.
And we hauled a $4,000 customized burrito line that we had bought from an equipment dealer because we knew that we were going to have to change up like how the restaurant worked, right? And so we were like, this thing's going to be awesome. We can do the whole thing off. This thing was a tank. It took 9 guys to get it in the restaurant. But it was awesome. I mean, we used it for, what, 5 years damn near?
Yeah. It's still my favorite piece of equipment.
We drive all the way to North Carolina straight through, sleeping at truck stops. Dave hands us the keys on his last day. We get all of our equipment in the restaurant, lock the door, go get our apartment, which I had to rent sight unseen because we didn't have time to come back. We couldn't afford to drive back. So I rented an apartment here in town without seeing it off pictures off the internet. I remember driving over there and we go over there and we unlock the door and you start bawling because it smelled like cat piss and cigarettes.
Oh, I was so upset.
And I had to calm you down. We're like, look, we'll clean it. We'll pay a cleaning company to come in and clean it. I'll have the, you know, the apartment complex clean it again. It'll be fine. We'll make it. And we unloaded all of our personal stuff into the apartment, just dumped it, slept on one of our mattresses, got up the next day and drove all the way back home because we had to have Thanksgiving dinner with our families. So we did that. I think we spent 2 days at home, maybe. Got the rest of our stuff that we left, small stuff. Jumped in the van and made the final trek back out here. And didn't open the cafe until January
27th. Or 24th.
24th. The health department was holding us up for a little while, but I remember when we came.
But, you know, we say that. The health department's holding us up. But, seriously, we opened the cafe in 8 weeks. Like, our poor franchisees now, like, so we say, like, they held us up. But it seriously was 8 weeks.
I remember after Thanksgiving coming back, and up until this point, we had not met Nick, our landlord.
No.
The guy we were going to rent the space from. We had never met him. We bought this place, moved all of our shit in there, rented an apartment, never met the landlord. We go to the landlord's office and show up like two gym rats in hoodies and shorts in the middle of the winter because here in Wilmington, everybody's like, oh, this is cold. Well, we're coming from the Midwest. I'm thinking 50 degrees. I'm in shorts and a hoodie.
Yeah.
And we go to this dude's house, full-blooded Sicilian Italian. He shows up and he goes, who the fuck are you guys? Just like that. And we're like, where are your new tenants? And he goes, what do you mean? He goes, we bought Picasso's Deli on Racine Drive. He goes, what? He goes, I didn't even know Dave was selling it. And then he looks at me and he goes, well, what kind of lease do you want? And I remember this like it was yesterday. And I'm like, well, man, I don't know. We just met you. You're the landlord. Why don't you tell us? And so he wound up just taking like whatever lease Dave had and put our name on it. We were so dumb and young, had no idea of how that process worked. And we just got lucky and he loved us. And their family has been amazing for the last 10 years we've known them. They've just treated us like family. We've been to their house for Christmas dinners before. I mean, they're amazing people. They're awesome people to deal with. But that's how we got the first one open. We just kind of winged it, figured it out as we went. I remember we had been off for a month prior to that. We didn't work for like 30 days. And sitting around our apartment waiting to get the cafe open, we were talking about like, fuck, I just want to go make some chicken salad. Like we hadn't done our thing in so long. And then we had these big, bold visions of that when we moved here, we were just going to operate our cafe during the day, go to the gym at night, walk on the beach in the evenings. It was not like that when we moved out here. We wound up opening our doors, and the first 2 or 3 days, we had a line wrapped out the door down the sidewalk. And we were fucking dead. Yeah. We had worked ourselves to death. We weren't enjoying it. I remember that.
I was like, oh my gosh, my feet hurt so bad that day. And we hired no employees. It was just me and Dawn. Because back home, we weren't busy because everyone did not have a healthy mindset at that time, you know? And, but the, when we had moved here from Thanksgiving and as we were waiting for the health department, we worked out at the Gold's Gym every single day. So we just, that was our whole marketing plan, was just, we're just going to be in the gym all day and just talk to people and wear our shirts and all this. So
we took menus in our gym bag.
Yeah. So we're just like, we promoted. And then when we opened, they all came. So I was like, oh gosh, like this never happens. No one ever wants to eat healthy. So it was crazy. So me and you, and it's continued. And then we finally hired one employee after that. And then we created a crew. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember when we moved out here, we wanted to do something different that we weren't doing back home, which was take a day off. We were open 7 days a week with locale back home. And we were like, we are not working on Sundays. We're taking Sundays off. That lasted about a week. And we were so busy that we needed Sunday to catch back up prepping food. So I remember there was a few Sundays we got to take off, but most of them, I remember going in.
Cafe was still closed,
but we were in there working. So we had to prep and catch back up for the following week. So that didn't work out as planned. But I think fast forward to 2015, we were open 2 years. And we had these guys that kept coming to the cafe that were a little older. And by then we had, established a pretty good name for ourselves in the neighborhood and across Wilmington that a lot of people had knew who we were by then. And I think it caught on to a group of guys here in town that were, I don't know what you call them, angel investors. Entrepreneur type guys. And they kept asking us, where do you see yourself in 5 years? What do you want to do with this business? Just asking personal questions. And man, at that time we were like, dude, I don't know, man. I got
we're
a show coming
best
up.
Life. Yeah.
All I want to do is go train right now, and you're holding me up because you're asking me all these questions. Was kind of the mindset that I had, and come to find out, they were intrigued by our business model, and then, right at that same time was, you and I were trying to open a second location. We were like, okay, we have this under our belt now. Like, let's expand, and so we went to an equipment dealer right here in town, which ironically his office is right across the street from where we're sitting right now, and talked to him about doing an official like layout. We were like, okay, if we're going to do this right, we're going to do it exactly the way that we're going to do it. And sat there and had a conversation with him, and he was like, guys, I can't do this in good conscience without at least presenting to you guys the idea of franchising this model. There's nothing like that around here. Think you guys got something special. You should think about franchising it. And we had talked about it until then, but I think it was just a scary move that we weren't ready to make yet. We were just too young. And
well, we knew we were going to take over the world, but we just didn't know how it was going to be done yet. And franchising was like, we thought we'd do it on our own, like me and you just keep opening. But
so he gave us a business card of some guys here in town that we're taking emerging brands and franchising them and getting them started. And we called that guy and met him at the cafe a couple of days later. And boy, he was a salesman. He talked us right into it. I remember the idea of it, we had like big eyes. We were like, holy shit, we're going to do this. This is going to be awesome. We were like two kids in a candy store. We meet this guy at the cafe, and he tells us how they're going to do it and get it started. And we were in, and we wrote the guy a check, same deal, wrote him a check for $25,000.
We didn't do it that day. We went home and talked to Laura Berkey for the weekend, and then came back and had a second meeting with him. So we at least had like 2 days in between writing this check.
Okay, we'll call it what it is. We gave this dude a $25,000 check without knowing him, without vetting him too seriously. And I remember going to our townhome that we were living in at the time. We'd already moved into a better apartment. And I'm like, Yvonne, we did it again. Like, we wrote this dude a check. We know nothing about this. We didn't call other brands these guys have worked with. We didn't do anything. So we had a little minor freak out moment. And I got the dude on the phone. I'm like, hey, can you give us some numbers of people that you've worked with so that we can call him and talk to him? And luckily he did. And we called him, and they were like, yeah, great. They're good. They got us going, blah, blah, blah. So it made us feel better about ourselves. Didn't learn our lesson, though.
No.
And we ultimately franchised with those guys. And then it took off like a rocket ship after that. And I don't think that rocket has slowed down since. But the first five or six cafes that we had, franchised units, were customers. I don't know if they all were, but I remember the first half a dozen, most of those were customers of the cafe.
And I, like I said, I don't know where, but I was like, thank goodness, because like we had no operations. I mean, if someone would come and look at us, or whoever we're like vetting now would been there 10 years ago, or, you know, 8 years, how long, 6 years? 6 years in October is how long we franchised. Okay. So 6 years ago, and looked at our systems and procedures, they would freaking laugh us out of the, and be like, you want us to pay you for this, you know? So it was, thank goodness they just believed in us as people to do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, they believed in us, not our systems and procedures.
Bad. It was so bad.
It was the brand and us.
But again, they took these bad things and they opened, and they were executing it, you know? So I guess, you know, but we had a lot of hands-on back then.
Did we even have a website?
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about that. We didn't have a web. No, well, we did. Maybe we did.
Yeah. We were still using from Midwest.
Yeah.
We used to like hand make all the emails and stuff. So we actually were creating a email campaign at this time. So,
which was brand new.
Yeah.
To us. Because we used to originally, this is going to blow your mind off if you're listening to this and you have any idea of how technology works. We used to text our menu out to our customers on a flip phone.
Yeah.
Remember that?
And then they text us back
three times.
Yeah. And then they text us back the, their orders, and then we would write it down on a notebook. Yeah.
I've always said, without trying to be too arrogant about it, I'll never say that we were the first or that we pioneered the meal plan business. But man, if we didn't, we were one of the first ones to fucking do it.
Yeah.
Because nobody was doing it back then. There just wasn't too many of them around.
Well, I don't think, like, there might have been, like, subscription, like, online, which is crazy because, again, there wasn't social media at that. I mean, like, and I don't think Instagram was still there at that. Facebook was coming
there
and
was no
we were
Instagram,
doing. Yeah.
That,
so all of that marketing was not there. So I feel like there was some few that were, like, doing like mail orders or stuff like that. You know, I mean, like, obviously you have Jenny Craig and you had Weight Watchers and they were producing meals, and Nutrisystem, I don't know, has been around for a while. So they probably were like the first subscription base, I would think. But to do it in the cafe and have the cafe part and the meal plans, I'm still trying to think if there's still anybody out there that does both. I don't think there is, you know, but anyway.
Well, I think that's a good place to stop for now. Hopefully you kind of get an idea of what we're going to do with this project. I've got, as we were talking through this story again, I've got a million ideas for some episodes. We didn't talk about how we got through our first like logo and menu and
how Clean Eats became a name.
Sure. Those are all awesome stories that we don't really talk about, which I think is the point of this project, is to share some of those things, because I think there's people out there. Well, I know there is, because we're part of franchise network groups that people ask us, how did you guys do this? How did you start this? Or how did you do that? And those are the things that come naturally to you and I. And when we talk about it, people are like, holy shit, you did what?
Yeah.
That we don't really think about. And it just kind of comes natural. So I think.
Isn't that what everyone does? No.
This is going to be a fun project. I think the video stuff that we're going to do with it, the cooking shows, Red's Kitchen, I don't know if we're going to fold that into this, but cooking shows are going to start coming back. I don't know.
Yeah. We're back.
We're not going to put this in a box. I'm looking forward to it. All right, guys. Thank you. Please share this. You know, we're gonna market this a little bit, but the only way we can grow it is if you guys share it for us. So if you're listening and you like it, share it. YouTube, we're going to be putting all these episodes on YouTube and really pushing in the video content a little bit more. So, hope you guys enjoyed it, and see you next episode.